So welcome to The Change Show, and this week's special guest is Ricky Arundel, who I've met very recently, but has some fascinating stories to share with us about a leadership approach, if you like, which is very much of our time. And I think this is really critical because there's so much change going on out there in the workplace and in the world. And Ricky's got some, what I think are really poignant and timely messages to share. So Ricky, great to see you.
I'm pleased to be here.
So Ricky, tell us a little bit more about you for the audience.
Right. So I had a quite long career in financial services till about 2000, 2002, at which point a few things went wrong, relationship, big tax bills and a few things. And I suddenly realized I'd spent a lot of time helping organizations grow and build. And there I was with absolutely nothing to show for it. And I think a lot of people feel that thing. They get to particularly midlife and think, yeah, I put all that effort in and yeah, there's nothing. Yeah, a bit of pension, that's it. I just had this battle all my life with being transgender. It was something I was terrified to let anyone know about. You hear the comments and the background chatter that goes on, particularly within a male, the male world, the financial service industry, very male dominated anyway. And anybody that breaches the sort of gender norms for male generally got a lot of back chat, a lot of people talking about them behind their back, a lot of humiliation. And as a consequence, I just felt terrified to tell anybody or come out. And finally, I thought, right, that's it, I'm going to come out. Things were changing. I think as we came into the millennium, we were beginning to see changes. The Labour Party was significantly attacking and addressing the equality agenda. And I spoke to some people. An organization I'd done a lot of work with for 10 years had now closed down its conference program. One of the directors had come out as gay, which I hadn't really known about. It was been a sort of an open secret amongst a lot of them. And I'd always gone to every year they had a fancy dress party, and I'd always gone there a little bit outrageous, but never fully cross-dressed. And I said, look, this year, it's the last one. I'm going all out. They said, oh, it's just black tie this year. And I said, no, I'm going to come anyway. Put on the sequin dress and turned up. Everybody thought it was a bit of a laugh. And then I went and got changed into an evening dress and came back. And they said, oh, this is not so... And suddenly... it clicked. And about half the people thought it was amazing, and the other half have never spoken to me again. And so I began to realize that was what was going to happen. So I came out as transgender, and 6 months later, the business, everything fell off a cliff.
So that was obviously a challenging time then. So where did that lead you in your career?
I realized fairly quickly no one was booking me. And I spoke to a few people who had booked me, who told me that they had an enormous amount of pressure on them not to book me. And I began to realize the problem there. And this is the issue. It came up with conversations with family and other people. I began to realize by coming out, I wasn't just outing myself, I was outing them. And that was, I'd had 50 years to think about it and build up the courage to actually do it. They'd had 5 minutes, and suddenly it's, no choice. Suddenly we're out. And I think that's part of the problem, that when you've had a culture that has very much treated anything to do with LGBTQ as weird, as subversive almost, coming out, despite the fact that things were changing, you can change laws, that's relatively easy. Changing attitudes is a much, much more difficult challenge. It takes years.
So when you say it's outing them, it's outing their real thoughts and attitudes towards that community.
If they're friends with me, if they book me to speak, if they connect with me, do they are they very positive about LGBTQ? Are they gay themselves? So there's all those sort of, and the problem is, and this is what had affected me all my life, I was terrified to go anywhere. Like I wanted to go see the the stage production of La Cage aux Folles, Birdcage, and I didn't dare go in case somebody saw me going in and thought, oh, they may be trans. So I couldn't go to Rocky Horror Picture Show because I was terrified that people would connect. Obviously they wouldn't, because lots of people go to these shows, but that was all the time the problem. If I had a friend who was trans and other people saw me with them, would they start thinking I was?
Yeah.
If you don't have anything to hide, that's not a problem. But this whole issue of covering, and it's something which I've worked a lot with clients over the years, that people cannot bring themselves to work. They cannot be themselves. They have to watch everything they say, because there's always a possibility they're going to say something which will infer that they're gay, or that they're very pro-gay, or that they're something to do with the LGBT community. And that, they fear, as I did, would utterly destroy their career.
Yeah. So fast forward to 2021, what do you perceive from your perspective within the community? And, you know, you're constantly out there working all the time now. What do you feel are the main things that have changed in society?
Those people who are very pro-inclusion, diversity, now no longer have anything to fear. If anything, it's reversed. I think there's still a lot of people very uncomfortable. There are still people hiding who they are. The research that I've seen fairly recently in both UK and the States suggests that around 60% of people who are LGBTQ are not out at work. So it's still one of those things that people fear will affect decisions about their future, their progress, about things that they want, their life. So it's still a big problem. It's still there, and people still cover, people still hide it for fear of the way in which they'll be treated. On the other hand, because you look at the entertainment industry, it's almost like you can't get a job unless you are gay. It's getting that almost that way. I think most of the work that I've done over the past 15 years the big thing I did when I came out was I realized that if no one was going to book me because I'm transgender, what do I have to do so that they will book me because I'm transgender? And the answer was become an expert in gender and diversity. So I popped off to university, did a master's degree, got very actively involved in LGBT politics. And that has helped me. I ended up on the board of the Hull City Council, and all sorts of things happen because at the time everybody suddenly thought, we better get some trans people in because we don't have any and we need to demonstrate. So all of a sudden everybody needed to demonstrate that they were okay and cool with people who were LGBT.
Yeah.
So it opened everything up. So that period up and right the way through the sort of late noughties, early, what do we call it? What are we in now?
We're in the 20s. Where are we now? In the 20s now.
The teens. Anyway, at that point, it all started to work. I was doing lots of training until, of course, the public sector, basically had all their budgets snatched away from them.
Yeah.
What has happened more recently has been a very clear indication. I think this is coming from the multinationals. Big multinational organizations have realized that they cannot run an organization that's not inclusive. And it's become very clear, if you're not inclusive, if you're not embracing diversity, then it actually affects the bottom line. Inclusive companies are more profitable, are more stable, and get the better staff and get people that stay. So that is becoming clearer. So what I've noticed, certainly over lockdown, it's become more international. I'm now working all over the world and not leaving my dining room. but I'm working with companies that are multinational. They've got operations in Sweden. They've got operations in the United States, all over the States. And they've realized that the cost of bringing people together for training is just prohibitive. It's much better to do it online. And by going online, they no longer have to think about who have we got locally to do the training. They can just search out and find whoever fits with their culture better. So I am seeing very much more, a much more positive attitude coming from private sector organizations. Small SME businesses are still, some of them are just very inclusive, but they don't seem to be doing much in terms of training on it.
Okay, that's interesting. So a little bird tells me that you are an award-winning comedian. Go on, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, one of the things I did before I changed
gender was say, link it back to the you know, your message, if you like.
I changed gender. Before I changed gender, I'd set up the Professional Speaking Association, or I'd pulled together a team of people, and together we set up the PSA.
Yeah.
When everything happened and I had to pull away, I backed away from the PSA and I had to get involved in just getting my life together. So in 2018, Tiffany Kemp, the president of the PSA, invited me to speak as a keynote speaker at the PSA convention. Her son was transitioning. And so she thought that the topic needed to be addressed, and I thought it was very good. So I talked about that. I talked about the founding of the PSA and created a keynote, and it got me very actively back involved with the PSA. And every year they run a comedy event in memory of Kenny Harris, who was one of the PSA members who died some years ago, a good comedian. And I've always avoided it because I had bombed in the past. When I changed gender, I thought, maybe I could become a drag artist. Maybe I could become a comedian. It didn't work. I couldn't remember the punchlines. But I decided to have a go this year. So I stuck my hat in the ring and thought, right, I'll do it around transgender issues and some of the humorous incidents that start to go on the way in which. And it worked. The fact that it was a cohesive piece all about trans and about looking at a difficult issue, but with a bit of humour, went down really well. Lots and lots of great feedback, and I won. So I'm now an award-winning comedian. But I've had lots of requests. You know, are we going to see you live? Are you going to do this? And so I'm now looking at possibilities of being able to take that a little bit further. It will be hard work, because I think everybody thinks humour's easy, but it's not. To try and make a difficult topic humorous without offending the people within the community, that's actually quite challenging. So
it is, but it does have an ability to break down barriers, doesn't it? And also to give people that comfort level to laugh at something that they might be a little bit uncomfortable about. It just softens it a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, and most of the humour is self-deprecating. It's humour about things that happened to me. I hate crime and the kids attacking my house. And that wasn't very funny at the time, but looking back at it and the way in which we dealt with it, and it was dealt with positively, you know, it's quite funny in hindsight. You know, conversations people have had about me in my earshot without them realising it has been quite humorous to look at. So it's those sorts of things. And I've got a few more. I've got, you know, some interesting engagement with men who fancied me.
So for people who are maybe, you know, this issue or this concept, if you like, is brand new, what would you say would be the headlines, or where would you point them towards, if you like, in terms of trying to understand transgender a bit better?
I mean there's loads and loads of videos. I've got a TED talk online which outlines quite a bit. In 20 minutes, you'll get a good understanding of what's happening. And there are lots of quite good TED Talks around on this. The issue I think that people now need to deal with more than anything else is tackling. There's a huge growth in non-binary. That's people who are saying, I'm not going from male to female. I'm not going from female to male. I'm actually not really either. And what we've seen in the past 10 years is that has been a big growth in that, particularly amongst millennials. So it's a bit of a young thing. It's quite outrageous in some cases. Some of the people who are non-binary are reminiscent for me of what was going on in the glam rock era on stage with David Bowie and T-Rex and that sort of expression. Where you're breaking the boundaries of male dress. Well, now it's breaking boundaries in all directions. So women expressing more masculinity, men expressing more femininity, and actually at a point where you think, I don't know if you're male or female. And the answer is, well, I'm neither, and you don't need to know.
Yeah,
that's the challenge.
I remember a few years back, the BBC did a program talking about male brain and female brain.
Right.
And the fact that it didn't matter what case it was housed in, if you had a male brain, there were certain things that you found a bit more intuitive. And similarly, if you had a female brain, there were certain things you found more intuitive. And it had, as I say, nothing to do with the, whether you were in a what was a male body or a female body. And it's, and I think things like that start to cause people to question maybe some assumptions that they grew up with. And I'm quite conscious that people of dare I say, our era, have some assumptions that are very different to the assumptions that the younger generations are growing up with.
Yeah, I mean, each generation creates a new set of ideas and ideals coming forward. The male brain, female brain thing is really interesting. I think that was Simon Baron Cohen who was doing that one. He's done a lot of work on it. There's also Gillian Rippon, I think it is, and she disagrees. Okay. Completely. So we've got, you know, people, you know, all of these are, you know, are professors, post, you know, doctors,
yeah,
who've studied it and spent 5-6 years studying it using MRI scans and everything else, and they've come up with diametrically opposing views.
Good.
And there are more of them as well. There's a American Chinese woman who's, and what I find is sometimes they come up with exactly the right, I think, oh, they agree with me. They find exactly the same thing. And then they have exactly the opposite interpretation of what that means. And I think, ah. So the difficulty I find with this whole area is that it's awfully difficult to come to the topic without bringing your bias.
Yes.
And that's something I do a lot of work with on people, is trying to understand where bias is affecting us. So, and it really does impact us. If you walk into the office and there's somebody there with rather garish makeup, and you can't quite tell, is it a boy, is it a girl? And you've now got to work with them. And what pronouns do I use? How do I speak? Everybody then starts to think, I'm tongue-tied. I don't know how to talk to them. Am I going to say something that's going to upset them? Am I going to suddenly find myself in trouble because I've said the wrong thing? And I think that's the biggest challenge for everybody now. Not just about trans and gender. It's happening with race. It's happening with religion, with all diversity areas. Everybody's terrified. What language can I? What do I call somebody? How do I speak in a way that isn't going to offend someone?
Yeah.
Is it black or is it coloured or is it, you know, what's the right language? Is somebody trans? Is it Ms? It's mixed. Well, how do you pronounce MX? It's so you can see this awful dilemma everybody's facing, and I think that's the challenge we've got to face: is how do we make everything more inclusive? And in some ways, it's we've got to change our language.
Yeah.
In order to talk about things that now we cannot talk about with the old language.
Love it. And I know you do a lot of work with your clients around bias. And
yes.
And so I'd like to actually, after the break, come back and talk to you about that. And specifically, what is the work that you do with clients? If they were to book you, if they were to work with you, how might you be able to transform their environments? Because that's what leaders are looking for right now. How can we make this a more inclusive environment? So I'll be fascinated to dig into that with you and hear how you're helping them.